This conference will now be recorded.
Hi, everyone, and welcome. It's Pamela Rowe from SimpleDevelopmentSystem.com, and I'm so glad to have you here. Our topic today is something that everyone can use, learning how to write effective thank you letters. I was really kind of surprised in my recent survey, Fundraising in a Tight Economy, that almost 60% of you spoke to wanting to learn more about how to create an effective donor stewardship plan. But you know, it really just makes good sense. You work really hard to attract your new donors. You need to work just as hard to keep them. And that's why I'm so excited to have with us today Lisa Sargent of Lisa Sargent Communications. Lisa is a copywriter and creative consultant who specializes in donor fundraising and development communication. She has helped great nonprofits all over the world, and she specializes in donor thank you letters that are so inspiring that delighted donors have actually written their own thanks in return. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you very much, Pam, and thank you for giving me a chance to talk with your listeners about a subject near and dear to my heart, which is donor loyalty.
It's a subject that's near and dear to my heart, too. Lisa, how does not having a comprehensive donor stewardship system in place really hurt an organization? What are the latest statistics on donor attrition rates?
Well, one quick thing I'd mentioned before we start is that I'll send along a reference sheet to you so that your callers don't need to frantically jot down any names of resources that I mentioned so that they can revisit the links or books or whatever I mention when it's convenient for them.
Oh, awesome.
But in terms of what happens when there isn't a comprehensive donor stewardship system in place, that's a tongue twister for both of us. You could really sum it up in just three words. Disillusioned donors leave. And what they do, of course, is then they take their future gifts with them. But really, when you said, you used the phrase comprehensive donor stewardship, and that's terrific because really it is about comprehensive donor stewardship. The donor numbers, they tend to suffer in degrees, really, when any of three stewardship areas are lacking. Quality, of course, meaning that you're creative, as you talked about, has to be professional and persuasive, but also in terms of completeness and consistency. And what I mean by that is donor stewardship, typically among a lot of nonprofits, they seem to think that it's a function that's just reserved, say, for their major or their mega donors. And so by doing that, they only look at part of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get right down to it, stewardship is really about treating your donors right so that you build lifelong relationships with them, and that has got to transcend giving levels. And over the long term, it's really clear if you look at when only the mega givers are focused on, you can look at legacy data is something that I'd like to share with you. Something like 90% of all legacy gifts to charities in the United States were made by simple bequest, meaning, of course, that it was left in someone's will. It's not a fancy annuity or anything like that. Now,
mm-hmm.
Here's the kicker. The average amount was $35,000, and that's pretty sizable.
Mm-hmm.
And they typically come from people who never gave more than $100 gifts over the years, not your major or mega donors, just people who gave consistently. So long-term effect of good donor stewardship would be culminating in, of course, the legacy gift. But now for other nonprofits, they say, well, what about the short term? Really, long term, that's 20 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where those donor attrition statistics that you asked about come into play so handily. And I'll share a couple with you. Your callers, many of your callers, have probably heard that on average, for every 6 new donors they acquire, 5 of their existing donors will leave. But the fallout from poor donor stewardship goes deeper. There's a study called the Fundraising Effectiveness Project. It was it's still ongoing, sponsored by the Urban Institute and the AFP, Association of Fundraising Professionals. They found in 2008 that for every $6 raised, more than $6 was lost due to donor attrition.
Really?
So nonprofits are acquiring new donors, but the new donors that they acquire, it's nearly obliterated. Any gains that they would get are nearly obliterated due to the losses in both lapsed new donors and lapsed repeat donors. So I have one more. I have one more bit of benchmarking statistics for you. There's a survey called the Target Analytics Survey, and they poll a lot of bigger organizations. They confirm the fundraising effectiveness project's results. Nearly 8 in 10 of the nonprofits in their survey saw their biggest decreases in first-year donor retention. So the bottom line is what you said. Obviously, you have to continue to acquire new donors, but recession or no recession, once you've got them, it's way more cost-effective to keep the ones you've got, and it's the only way, really, that you'll ever grow your organization.
Oh, absolutely. I think in a lot of ways it's the same for businesses.
Absolutely. Loyalty, in fact.
Exactly. I noticed that a lot of the work that you do involves actually auditing an organization's donor acknowledgement system. Mm-hmm. But the organizations that I tend to work with and the organizations who are typically my subscribers, they're smaller organizations. And a lot of times they don't even have a system in place. You know, the process is when a gift comes in, they send out a thank you letter. But then as things get more hectic, a lot of times that's the first thing that falls through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
What are the questions that you recommend asking of an organization just starting a donor acknowledgement system, a formalized system?
Well, I think there's a couple parts to that question. When you talk about smaller organizations, one of the first things that I would do if I was at one of those organizations would be to look to your volunteers. I mean, if your resources are really, really short, then a lot of times you've got folks, a decent volunteer pool within your community, people who are just dying to help out. And that can go all the way down to having, say, volunteers or even your staff handwrite thank you notes. That is actually done with huge success at Stanford University, and I'll give you a link to that. They give out templates to their students, and the students send the thank you letters out themselves. So volunteers could do that for you. You could find college kids or retired people who are tech savvy to help you get spreadsheets up and running. And then when your organization grows, if it's on Excel, it's pretty easy to import that data. But backing up in a minute and talking about questions that I would ask someone just starting a donor acknowledgement system would be to go back to coin a little bit of Jim Collins' phrases in the great bestseller, Good to Great. He says, first who, then what. So when you start with the who part of that equation in a donor acknowledgement system, you need to look at your staff first. Who is going to claim ownership of that acknowledgement program? And then follow that through and say, okay, if they claim ownership, who is responsible for helping this person? So someone needs to oversee it. Someone needs to track the gifts and the donors who give the gifts. Someone needs to write the letters, whether you outsource it or you have somebody do it in-house. Now, if someone does that, then you need at least one other person to edit and proof that stuff, because it's always good to have a second set of eyes. Now, thinking about who, you also need to think about who, meaning your donors. Who is giving? How long have they been giving? And if you don't know how long they've been giving, can you find that out or back into that info? Because at some point, you should absolutely be recognizing longevity and giving for donors. It's huge.
Oh, absolutely.
You could also think about things like where they come from, and that would be just for tracking demographic or psychographic information for your creative people. Then the second part, of course, is the what, and the what would mean gifts. You could start by looking at what gifts you have coming in, any appeals or activities that you have that generate those gifts,
mm-hmm.
and as well as the type of gifts, like are any of them major gifts, memorial, sponsorship, that kind of thing, golf tournaments. So first look at who can handle the function, look at the donors, and look at the thank you or the gifts that you have coming in, and then you can say, okay, well, these are the lists of thank you letters that we're going to need to get the thanking done.
Awesome. This next question is really a personal question that I've had experience with. You recommend sending an acknowledgement letter within 48 hours of receiving the donation, and I've always been a big believer in that.
Yay.
But what if you are a development director with kind of a difficult executive director, and we're talking about someone who has really good intentions? I should have said challenging, right? And once they want to personally sign every letter acknowledging a gift over, say, $250, But you cannot pin that ED down on a regular basis for the life of you. And a lot of times, you know, because of it, you're finding that your letters are going out 2, 3, even 4 weeks later. Do you have any recommendations for that? I when I was in that situation, I used to call them.
Yeah.
And say thank you. But do you have any other recommendations?
Well, you know, if you and this I'll list this reference for you as well. If you read Penelope Burke's book, it's fabulous, Donor-Centered Fundraising. She actually talks about that, how, you know, she says, what's wrong with picking up the phone and calling to say thank you? Because it really does have big impact. So you did a good thing. But in terms of pinning somebody down to try and sign the letter, that's a pretty loaded question. I do have a couple of suggestions, though. Now, and it's hard because I do sit squarely in the donor-centered fundraiser's side of camp, and I always recommend to all of my clients that thank yous come from the top. The president or the executive director really should be signing the thank you letters. But let's say he or she is really swamped. You could split up the thank you signing among, say, board members or other executive-level managers and maybe have the executive director sign at $500 or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing you could try is it might be just a matter of saying, look, once a week, we'll sit together. I'm going to come into your office and I'm not going to leave until it's done. I'll buy you a cup of coffee, you know, or quantify it for them. Say it's 25 or 30 signatures a week. And if they're a numbers person, I'll give you a little bit of fuel for your argument. Again, I would say go to Penelope Burke's Donor-Centered Fundraising, and specifically chapters 5 and 6, where she discusses it from a donor's point of view. Her research, she surveyed just tons of donors about how they felt about being thanked or not being thanked, various issues of fundraising. And what happens is that 39% of the donors in her survey, so that's less than 4 in 10, said that they always receive a thank you letter after donating. And it makes a difference to them. A lot of them won't give again. So you could back that up, your little argument of getting him to sign the thank you letters, by saying, look, you know, they're not going to give again, and then you're going to face bigger problems down the road. So there's also another good book. Tom Ahern wrote a book with his wife, Simone Joyeau, called Keep Your Donors, and chapter 14 of that book has a lot to talk about with thank you letters. Anything Tom Ahern writes, including his e-newsletter, is really good.
Oh, that's funny. I actually just bought that last night.
Oh, it's a great
book. On Amazon. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I just right before I think I connected with you, learned about Tom, is it Ahern? Is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm.
Through, well, I've been a subscriber to Mel Warrick's stuff for ages.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it.
Yeah, I
love his stuff. I love his newsletter. I love his before and afters. Really awesome stuff.
Yep.
Okie doke. My next question is, you recommend starting the letter off with something other than thank you for your gift of. What are some examples of some exciting leads? I think, you know, I took the Penelope Burke, her one-day seminar, and she recommended starting off with a quote.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a quote fan, so that was a no-brainer for me. What are some examples of exciting leads?
Oh, wow. Her book is great. She actually has a couple of really good ones in her donor-centered fundraising book. And the only thing I would say about leads is that, hands down, the very best leads I ever read or wrote are super specific to both the appeal and to the work of the charity. So it's really hard to just rattle off 3 or 4 boilerplate leads that will work for anyone's nonprofit, because then they tend to really sound like boilerplate leads, you know. And I think that's a lot of the problem with thank you letters these days. But I do have a really good resource for you, and it's on the reference sheet I'll send, and it's a great resource not only for thank you letter leads, but also for your callers and listeners to see before and after versions of entire thank you letter rewrites from nonprofits all over the world. Now, I have to give you full disclosure because this is my copywriting clinic that I hosted for Ken Burnett over at the website SOFI, which you know about SOFI, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the showcase of fundraising innovation and inspiration, I think. I always get the last two confused. Anyway, with or without my thank you letter clinic, it's a fabulous resource for fundraisers. And all of your callers, I would urge them all to sign up. We've got
I think SOFI is the best.
Do you? Yeah, I do too. And they just have so many examples, and it's like a swipe file online. It just sits there. It's wonderful.
Exactly,
anyway.
And I'm glad you mentioned the swipe file thing.
Do you have them?
Well, because I think that so many folks in the nonprofit field, they've never even heard of a swipe file. And when I first started out in nonprofit development, I actually didn't have the time to hook up with AFP or take any of the traditional courses, and I just started out reading a lot of marketing books, and
mm-hmm.
I've been in sales. And I really built up every job I've ever had, every client I've ever had, I've built up nice swipe files, kind of specific to those organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you're right, SOFI is just an awesome resource.
It's great, and swipe files actually are good for all of your nonprofits. What they can do, a really simple way to get started would be to at the very least, start with nonprofit organizations within their vertical sector, so animal welfare or international relief, that kind of thing, and they
mm-hmm.
could start by just giving some donations to the competition, basically, $25 here or there, and then you just see what comes in the mail. What are they sending? What does it look like? It's super helpful. And it actually, in a lot of ways, I think that your smaller nonprofit clients would be really surprised to see, encouraged, I guess, to see that they could do as well or better.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Absolutely.
And SOFI is actually a great place to go because Ken Burnett and all the great people at SOFI, they work with all kinds of, you know, renowned fundraisers from all over the world. Like you had mentioned, Mal Warwick, George Smith, who's a fundraiser over in England. He has some stuff on there. It's wonderful. But in terms of the thank you letter clinic that we did, we got amazing feedback from folks, not just folks who submitted their letters, but from the broader SOFI community, which, believe it or not, is now about 6,000 fundraisers. And they have just written in to say, you know, this clinic has been really useful to us. So that is not a pitch. It's just I recommend it because your callers may find it pretty helpful.
Absolutely. That's how I found you.
Oh, yay. I'm so glad. What it boiled down to, of course, you know, since you saw the clinic, is that brave nonprofits from the SOFI community submitted their before versions to me of their thank you letters, and they let me rewrite them. And then they let me go a step further by taking the before and after versions and posting them online for all the world to see, along with complete annotations. So you'll find in various places, I point out, there's a little, as you've seen it, there's the little editing bubbles that say, you know, here, this part needs to be more you-focused, or all the various elements that need to go into a good fundraising letter, thank you letter. And then there's also a checklist there. I think it's like 16 items or something like that of, to me, what are the most essential elements of a thank you letter, including the good leads. So they can find all that stuff there online.
Do you think it's a good idea to tell the donor when and how they'll be hearing from you?
Absolutely. I think it's not just a good idea. I think it's essential. And I think that the thank you letter is probably the best place to start. It doesn't have to be some long laundry list recitation of every communication that you plan to send them in the next year. It can be something really simple, just by saying, and we'll update you on all the good things your support makes possible in our quarterly newsletters. So there's a couple reasons for it, too. It's really like priming the pump, and I don't mean to have that come out in a derogatory way. What I mean is more that they get the thank you letter, and they see this little sentence, okay, quarterly newsletters. So then another month goes by or 2 months go by, and in the mailbox pops this newsletter. Well, the donor has a little seed planted in their head already, and they say, oh, hey, not only did this organization keep their promise to me, they've sent me the newsletter just like they said they would, but now I'm curious to see what it is. So you've really accomplished two things there. You've improved your chances of getting the newsletter open, and you've proved to them that you're somebody who keeps your promises.
And I know that we didn't talk about this before, but do you think that a newsletter has to be an 8-10 page thing?
Oh, goodness, no. Absolutely not. I don't think so. And actually, if you look at any of Tom Ahern's stuff, oftentimes when he's talking about smaller nonprofits and such, it can even be as simple as a one-page letter. Could be single-sided, double-sided. I hate to waste blank paper, so you could say double-sided. And you could just send it out a few times a year if you're a small. It doesn't have to be a big, elaborate newsletter. Another thing that I've done with nonprofits when there's a newsletter is to also include a cover letter with that. So something else that can be done.
Do you think that you should include, this is a question we didn't talk about either, but do you think that you should include a reply envelope in every newsletter? I know that that's something that's been argued, and I've always believed I have never included.
In your newsletter, I would think that would be perfectly fine. And the reason I say this is because I've seen it done. One of the great ways that it worked is if you have a newsletter, which is accompanied by a cover letter,
mm-hmm.
and that whole packet can have a reply envelope in it. The pain point comes really, or the hot button issue for fundraisers is really the ask, no ask issue in a thank you letter. That's the real.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's the real bone. And actually, I went head to head with a fundraiser. He's from Australia, Sean Triner, and it was in the part two of that Sophie Clinic about ask or no ask in a thank you letter. And I obviously come out on the no ask. I don't think a thank you letter should have a business reply envelope. I don't think it should have an ask. And plenty of fundraisers will shoot me down the minute this hits the airwaves and say, what? She's crazy. But to me...
I'm with you.
Are you?
And actually, totally.
Overwhelmingly, the Sophie voters voted for a no ask. If you have a good donor stewardship system in place and you have a good donor communication system in place, then you're really not in a hurry to cram the asks down their throat. You say, okay, you've got a newsletter
mm-hmm.
that's going to come out 2 months afterward, or, you know, so we've sort of veered off track. But, yeah, I'm with you on a no ask.
Well, to put it really bluntly, I find it tacky.
Yes, and a lot of donors do, too. So,
well, how do you recommend that organizations communicate to their donors? Through newsletters, email, social media?
Well, evidence would suggest that all of the above is a good answer.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that, as you said, a lot of the organizations that may listen to this call are smaller, so they might be strapped for staff hours. And we talked about the fact that they maybe don't need to send out a full-blown newsletter, 8 or 10 pages. But as long as there's some regular communication coming in there through direct mail, obviously that's essential. Email, I'm a huge fan of email because online fundraising, if you follow any of the statistics, I think it's Convio has a great report on that. But email, online fundraising is growing by leaps and bounds. And also email newsletters, they don't cost a whole lot to send out. And as you and I both know, there's services like Constant Contact that make it super simple to do. You don't have to have tech knowledge or anything. And, of course, direct mail newsletters or anything coming through direct mail is important, as important as email, depending on your donor base, because some of your older donors still aren't online, and they probably never will be, or they're not that comfortable online.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I would say is that if you do decide to use email, you have to be really sure to capture the email addresses of people who come to your website with a sign-up box. And I wrote about that in my own email newsletter a couple of months ago, It sits online. You don't have to subscribe to anything. It's on the archives, and I'll include that link on the resource sheet for your.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'd like to check that out.
Sure.
Okay, maybe you've already answered this. In your opinion, what's the worst mistake an organization can make in a thank you letter?
Ooh, yeah, I guess there is the ask part, but actually I have another one. And I would even say that this might be worse than the note, than the ask, would be to not personalize the thank you letter.
Oh.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I can think of, believe it or not, and we talking about the whole swipe file thing, because I obviously donate to a number of charities, some that I love just for the pure sake of loving them, but others that I, because I want to track them and see what they send. Mm-hmm. So I send this $25 donation to this, and it really is a mega national U.S. charity. And apparently my little $25 gift was not enough for them, because the thank you that came back started off with, "Dear friend." And I thought, oh, that's really atrocious.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the thing is, though, if they're that big, they've got the resources.
Sure, of course. Of course.
In this day and age, everybody's got the resources. I mean, I've worked with little nonprofits that are on 10-year-old computers, but they still have mail merch.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yep, you're 100% right. It's so easy.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the big mistake number two would be the ask. The other one is the ask or the upgrade.
Ooh.
Right? When you get the thank you and it comes in and they say, oh, you know, now we want you to give monthly, or, and it's right in that thank you letter. To me, I don't think that's the time or the place to do it. There absolutely is a time, and you can't, you know, you and I both know it's a really fine line that nonprofits walk between over solicitation and going dark on your donors, meaning that they don't get enough communication from you. But really, a thank you letter should just purely be thank you.
I agree. How often do you recommend changing the standard thank you letter?
Well, I have updated thank yous as often as quarterly for one of my national nonprofit clients. But I would say at the minimum to revisit them in their entirety at least a couple times a year. And it doesn't mean that you may do a complete overhaul of your letters,
mm-hmm.
then. You just look at them to see, is anything stale? Are any of the numbers that you have in there, do they need to be updated? And another good trick I'll share with you and your callers is that once you get the body copy of the thank you letter down and it's looking good and you know that it's probably going to stand the test of time for at least 12 months or so, a great thing to do is to take the PS and use that to freshen up the content.
Oh, interesting.
So, and that,
I didn't really think about that.
Sure. Yep. We've done that before and it's worked pretty well.
I tend to use a lot of stories,
mm-hmm.
and I use them in my thank you letters too. And that would be one thing that I would typically do is to rotate my stories or even update a story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we've done that before too. And it's great.
Well,
I mean, the only thing you have to be really careful about, just as a caveat to that, and we have used stories, you know, my clients and I have used stories before. One time I can remember, this would be years ago, probably 5 years ago, we used a story and sent it to, I'm trying to think how it worked. I think it was some sponsors. And the person who had sponsored an animal hadn't sponsored this particular animal and was nice enough to call us and say, hey, I don't even know who this animal is. And we thought, oh, my gosh. So, you know, mistakes happen, and that's just something for you to keep in mind and learn from the mistake that we made so that you don't make it yourself.
Yeah. Well, I think you've already answered this, but do you need to thank a donor for something specific, for membership renewal, annual appeal gift, memorial?
Absolutely. I would say yes to all of the above. Your thank yous, to me, should always be appeal-specific and gift-specific. And it's really kind of spooky that you asked this question, because it's on my list of articles to write about in my newsletter. So your listeners are going to get just a little sneak peek about this concept of, with my clients, what I talk about is donor communications flow, or for want of a better term, flow-based communications. And what I mean by that is, the best way to explain it really would be to use an example. Let's say I send you a gift based on a holiday appeal that you send out, and I get back this sort of utilitarian cookie-cutter thank you. Well, as a donor, I'm really not grounded back to that original appeal. There's no connection for me, if you will. If you take it a step further and say, okay, let's suppose that you give a nonprofit a major gift, say $500. So your thank you then that comes back needs to be gift-specific, meaning that it's appropriate to your level of giving, hand signed by the CEO, a personal note in the margin. And then if you go a step further and you say, okay, you think about this, this person's a major donor, well, the first thing that comes to my mind is major donor giving society, special major donor updates, that kind of thing. If you can think in terms of overall communications flow, a kind of if-then sequence, if I send this or if a donor sends this, what do they need to receive? First of all, you'll always send stuff that's specific to an appeal or a gift, but it will also help to guarantee that your donor development communications are personal, timely, relevant, and specific. And as I said with the sponsorship blunder that we made many years ago, they also need to make sense. So if, let's say, I give a gift in your name to a nonprofit, well, you shouldn't also get a thank you letter from the nonprofit. Thank you for your gift. And I've seen this. I actually did a communications audit for a nonprofit several years ago, and when I looked at the gift letter, I said, did this person actually give the gift? And they all looked at it, and their faces fell, and they said, oh my gosh, no, this is the person who received it. So instantly, we changed that. So yeah, analyze them, and that is why we, you know, you always want to revisit those thank yous and look at them with an eye for, does this stuff even make sense from the get-go?
You mean to say that, like, someone gave a gift in honor of someone else, and the person, I wasn't following you there.
Okay, let's see. So this is kind of convoluted. If I give a gift, and I give in your name,
right?
For sure, I should get a thank you because I gave the gift to the charity. But then you should get some kind of a notification that says, hey, Lisa Sargent gave this wonderful gift in your name. But you shouldn't get thanked for the gift.
Exactly.
Right?
Okay, that's what I thought you were saying, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah. Yes, or I've also seen these memorial letters that, and actually Penelope Burke's book, I can't remember if it's chapter 5 or 6, she has a great lead for a memorial letter, and your listeners should check that out. Like, not the on behalf of blah, 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 whatever. It says something like, at a time when you were facing a loss, you chose to reach out to others too. It's just this fabulous lead for memorial letter.
Oh, I'm definitely going to check that out. It's been a while since I revisited that book.
It's terrific.
And this was a question because I've actually been looking into, I'm trying to set up a monthly giving plan for one of my clients. And so I've talked to a few people a few organizations who have already established them, and they seem to actually be more common in Canada and the UK than here. In the case of a donor who's on a monthly giving plan, do you think that a written thank you letter is necessary every month?
No. Well, and yes. You really have, that I can tell, two official chances to thank this donor. The first time they give, and then probably in the annual tax letter that you would send them, I would think. And that, of course, wouldn't be a tax letter that's as dry as 1,000-year-old toast. It has to have some life to it. But so you have those two chances to thank them. That said, though, I think that you have to immediately, again, think about communications flow and have some sort of communication that is sent to these folks regularly that reflects the fact that you know they're giving monthly. And you tell them how important they are, how important their regular gifts are. And it really can be as simple as modifying a version of your regular quarterly letter or your newsletter. And all you have to do really is change around some of the language so that it speaks directly to these regular givers, these regular supporters of your organization. So two versions will do the trick.
Awesome. And I know we're kind of running out of time. I had a couple more quick questions, and one is, where do you usually recommend placing the tax-deductible language? In the body of the letter, or I've always done it in fine print down at the bottom.
Yeah, and actually that's how I've always done it. There's one other place I've seen it in. This is another great book, Relationship Fundraising by Ken Burnett. He talks about maybe putting it on the back of the letter. If you send it out on 8.5 by 11, you could put the tax language on the back. And he based that recommendation on an Oxfam letter that he had received years prior. But for me, in personal experience, I'm with you. I've always seen it and written letters that place it in the footer of the letter in smaller italicized font. So the bottom line for your listeners really is to place it outside of the body of the letter, somewhere unobtrusive, because it's a joy sucker, you know.
Okay. And you also recommend including a PS, and I hardly ever see that, but I love PSs.
Oh, I'm so glad to talk about PS because I love PSs.
I do too. I think PSs are great.
But I
never see them. I mean, I've used them as long as I've been in fundraising, but
absolutely.
I never see them.
They're huge. And the reason that I would recommend them to anybody, any of your listeners or your readers or whatever, is because they get read. And if you look at, if you go back to Mal Warwick, the fabulous book, How to Write Successful Fundraising
Letters. Oh, mine is just dog-eared. That's my favorite book.
Yes, mine too. He has a thing, it's in the early chapters of the book, he talks about, I'm not going to pronounce it right, it's Siegfried Vogler. He has eye tracking studies that he did, and statistics prove this out too, that PSs get read, and often they get read first. Direct marketers know this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like something that's beaten into our heads, but they definitely get read. And I'll give you another little tidbit, and a lot of people will contradict me on this, but they're wrong. PSs get read in emails too. And I've seen it. I've tried it.
Oh, absolutely.
It, and it works. So we actually tested it with anchor text, you know, the hyperlink text that people can click through. And everybody said to me, no, we're not going to try this in the email. So we tried it, and we got something like some crazy click-through rate, like 9% or something at the bottom. And everybody was like, wow, we're going to put these in all the time.
Oh, wow. Well,
yeah.
That's good to know, too, because, yeah.
Yep.
Well, we're running out of time now. We've actually gone over. Do you have any final thoughts?
Actually, I have one little, very 30-second short story that I would share with your callers to let them know that this stuff really matters. And this was back 5 or 6 years ago, I don't know, 5 years ago or so, when I started, I was brought into this nonprofit to update their whole thank you letter series, and it was something like 43 letters. And these guys were big proponents of Penelope Burke, and they said, look, we want you to write these thank you letters, donor-centered, all the whole ball of wax. So we did it. And about, I'd say, 4 or 5 weeks later, I get this email from the president's executive assistant. She says to me, Lisa, you're not going to believe this. We just got a thank you letter from a donor thanking us for the thank you letter. And I will tell you that a couple of years later, they were still getting letters like that. So really, if you follow those principles, people notice. They truly, truly notice.
Oh, absolutely. And it's typically done so badly that it really sets you apart.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It really sets your organization apart.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Lisa. I really have learned so much, and I know that our listeners are going to, too.
Oh, you're welcome, Pam. And I would encourage anyone, if they have questions, you can relay them to me, or they can contact me directly. I'm happy to help. And it was really a pleasure talking with you.
Well, and I also wanted to let our listeners know that they should subscribe to your newsletter, the loyalty letter, at lisasargent.com.
Thank you, Pam.
Thanks so much, Lisa.
You have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Take care.